you.
You're a fascist, you are a racist, and the south side of Glasgow will reject you.
Hello, and welcome to Left Ungagged, the pro-indie podcast for lefties. This is our Hollywood election special. We'll be discussing the results from Thursday's election, where the SNP won the election at a canter, but fell tantalisingly short of an overall majority. I'm your host, David McClement, transmitting from the Blantyre Free State, and the only member of the Green Party that doesn't want to fight. Joining me is the eighth most electable SNP member in the West of Scotland, it's my guy's digital Michelangelo, Miss Deborah Thorin. Also joining us tonight, he likes to jet set between Dundee and Torrevieja. He's Falkirk's Pizza Hut Prince himself. It's the wee junior sociologist, Brian Stewart Finlay. Welcome, guys. How are you doing?
Hey!
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, it's been a tough one.
It was really well drawn out, wasn't it, the results?
Didn't realise how much I had held my breath until I woke up and was like, oh, thank God.
Well, 2 days is a long time to hold your breath.
very long time.
So, like I was saying, so we had the election on Thursday. The results kind of came in over Friday, Saturday. And the final score was SNP with 64 seats. That's an increase of one. The Tories were next with 31 seats, which was the same as what they picked up in 2016. Labour lost 2 seats and are now on 22 seats. The Green Party picked up 2 seats and are now on 8, and the Lib Dems a single seat and are now on 4. So what's your initial thoughts and feelings about the election then, guys? Deborah, do you want to go first?
Aye, sure. I think that it was good, good result. Obviously, I'd like to have got over that wee 65, but I think it was a good campaign. Lots of good, exciting stuff came out in the manifesto. Just have to make sure it's delivered upon, basically. I think the biggest surprise for me was the Greens. They done so well. It's a surprise, but not a surprise, if you know what I mean. I'm really glad that they got those seats, but I'm annoyed about that independent Green voice situation in Glasgow. But I'm sure you guys can talk about that in better detail than me.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later on.
Aye, that annoyed me. But Willie Rennie, he's still there.
Still there.
He's still there. Oh, he's going to need to get a bigger chair to sit on in the beach, or a bigger haystack to climb up or something. God bless.
I heard him say in one of the result shows that he was planning to go skydiving in this election. Mm-hmm. But it was weather pulled off. And one of the journalists actually said they think Willie Rennie just uses elections to fill his bucket list, to do things that he wants to do, which I can't even think of a better reason than getting into politics, to be honest.
It's a good motivator.
Yeah, I think Willie Rennie has just become a bit of a caricature as a politician, particularly when it comes right to election time. It's always interesting to see what he's getting up to.
He seems to have embraced it.
Yes, and he laughs about it. Mm-hmm.
I just can't help but like him. I don't necessarily like his politics or that. I think he's just a dead likeable sort of character.
Yeah.
So Brian, what was your initial thoughts then in the election?
So that was actually my preferred outcome, which is a little bit controversial. I didn't want the SNP to have an overall majority for a few reasons relation to the budget's initial proposals in the last parliament. I think it was quite concerning in a few areas. But I was really happy that the Greens picked up seats. I was a little disappointed with the situation, which I know we'll talk about in more detail. Glasgow, I thought, was a shoo-in for a second seat. And the south of Scotland, I knew it was always going to be really tight. But it was really, really close. And it's just a shame not to see Laura Moody in Parliament. I think she'd be a really good addition. Plus Kim Long in Glasgow too. But generally, I was really, really happy. I actually definitely screamed when I found out that Maggie Chapman was elected, because I'm up here in the Northeast. And I was really chuffed when Lorna Slater was elected, especially being the very last one, and she'd done a little dance, and I was just like, that's great, I think that was the best outcome. And I was disappointed that the Tories didn't lose more seats, but we can dive more into the details about the sort of tactical voting and things like that. But yeah, that was, I think, would have been a really good message as well, that if, you know, because, you know, the Tory comeback in 2016 would have been good to see that getting, you know, cut down a little bit. But unfortunately, it did not.
Okay, since we kind of both sort of raised some of the issues with the Greens, so maybe we should talk about that first. So the Greens get an increase of 2 seats. Personally, although it's a good result, by the end of it, I was a bit disappointed because certainly a lot of the polling was indicating that they might do more. Although historically, the Greens have tended to do better in the polls than the actual result. But certainly, I thought they were going to pick up 10 seats. And in the end, they lost out on those last 2 seats, both in Glasgow and south of Scotland.
I thought double digits as well. I was really optimistic for them. And obviously, I was advocating both votes SNP, but if somebody was saying I'll be voting the Greens second list, I'd be like, definitely.
I spoke to quite a few people. I mean, I'm obviously, as was pointed out at the start, the pizza prince of Falkirk. all my family and loads of friends down there. And I was, you know, the day before the election, actually contacted every single one of my friends and everyone that I had on my phone. And I was like, what are you thinking about doing? And they were all like, yeah, both votes SNP. And I was like, nah, mate, what you want to do is you want to do this. And of course, as far as I'm aware, most of them done that. And that might have helped contribute towards, you know, the Greens picking up a seat in Central. So I was very happy with that one too, which is first time in history. So that's good.
It's great. Mm-hmm. It was a good one.
It was the Greens' best ever result. Like, they get 7 mm-hmm. in 2003, which sometimes I think people forget about that result.
You forget that happened.
And Central was the only region, I think, that they hadn't picked up a seat at any stage in the Parliament history. I was quite pleased to see Central. I'm a member of South Lanarkshire Greens, so although technically Blantyre is in Glasgow for some bizarre reason.
So weird.
The most of my branch is sort of based in Central, so really happy to see Gillian Mackay get elected.
That was good. Was there one that was 20%? You got a swing of 20%? Because I was watching it with my girlfriend, the results, and I went, oh, that's an amazing result for the Greens. And then the commentator said the exact same thing.
In Glasgow, they get something like 34,000 votes. In almost any other election, I think they'll definitely been the second seat. They were about 900 behind the Tories. If they just get slightly more, they would have gotten that last seat.
And it would have been great to see the Tories cut, particularly in Glasgow. I think, you know, like Kim Long versus, you know, a second Tory seat. I mean, it's just so frustrating. And, you know, like, we're going to delve into this independent Green Voice situation.
Because
it's duplicitous. Like, that's the only word for it. It's duplicitous.
It's calculated, and you know, and the fact that it was independent Green Voice, and the first word they chose to describe themselves was organic. I was like, you're not really into green issues if you think that that is, you know, the first word to sell yourself as being green.
It was like green sort of boggle. They just picked out random words that they associate with environmentalism.
And because they went with the independent Green Voice, it sat above the Greens on the list, up.
Also, their logo had just green in big letters.
And the leaf, it was just sneaky.
I don't know how the Electoral Commission allowed them to get away with it. It was really clear what they were trying to do, which was just votes away from the legitimate Green Party.
And what was it? There was 1,000 votes in it.
They got 2,200 votes,
it was just under the 1,000 that we were short of in the end. For anybody who doesn't realise that Independent Green Voice isn't like a green splinter group of some kind, which would, if they had a different take on certain green issues or differences with the mainstream Green Party in Scotland, that would be perfectly fine. But this is a party set up by a far-right unionist, I'm not even going to say his name, but what he is, will know he's known by the name Manky Jacob. you know, he doesn't care about green politics. It was a very cynical move to do nothing more than confuse voters and damage the Green Party, which, thanks to the Electoral Commission, it worked. It cost us a seat.
Is there anything that can be done retrospectively? Like, can you lodge a complaint, the Green Party, or
they could? I'm sure they could probably lodge a complaint. I'm not sure what practical difference that would make in the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Twitter, that Mark Ruskell has shared a tweet that somebody had picked up, and he had the number of votes and things like that, and tagged the Electoral Commission in it. Mark Ruskell had tweeted about it, and Patrick Harvey had shared it. So I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to, you know, what interventions they can do, I don't know, but perhaps mm-hmm. they want to make sure that that can't happen again, because that, you know, in future elections could be really problematic.
Yeah, well,
the list was long enough anyway. I mean...
And there was parties I'd never even heard of, you know, and you know, you actually follow politics really closely, and it's like, what? Like, how many abolished parties was there for the, you know, how you think that they would do it?
People just wanted to get to the top of the list,
and you think maybe you would just set up a WhatsApp chat with everybody that wants to get rid of Holyrood, because there's not that many, and just be like, let's just do one ticket, you know, and maybe, you know, get a couple of thousand votes to make a point, but no.
That was abolished the Scottish Parliament Party, mm-hmm. and then there was another abolished the something else.
Mm-hmm. I didn't and then quite... UKIP as well. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, UKIP as well. And the Reform Party, I didn't know they were still going.
They're still a thing, and you've got no leaflet there.
Let's see, still a thing. Parties that I literally had in. Thank you,
is that Michelle Ballantyne? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A bit of an anorak.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Just
what party is that?
Yeah.
The Reform.
Well, it's just basically the Brexit party, isn't it? Yeah.
More Brexit, I think, is what they're saying. more Brexit. we haven't Brexited enough.
Brexit plus.
Brexit plus, yeah. Changing politics for good. That was their...
Yeah. And apparently, I've seen Michelle Ballantyne speaking on that election special that interviewed George Galloway and whatever, and she just kept saying that we needed common sense in politics, yet provided absolutely no common sense in any of the ideas or proposals that were putting forward. It was just, you know, because we need common sense in politics, and I don't think Michelle Ballantyne is the best person to be advocating for that.
She was a Tory MSP, am I right?
She was. She was the one that went viral after being really quite horrible about the two-child cap and rape clause, basically saying that she supported it, and you know, people, you know, basically shouldn't have had children if they couldn't afford it. That was essentially the sort of tone of what she said, and common sense in politics.
Oh, I've just realised that it's not the woman from Dragon's Den. I thought it was one of those celebrity endorsements. Sorry, I know who you're talking about.
Yes,
I just stared at the picture for a very long time and went, I don't think that's who I think it is. What was the worst performing party, do you think?
Lib Dems, really, because they were the one. It's statistically, it's the Labour Party, but because Anna Sowers liked by the votes, it doesn't seem to have been like, because apparently the Scottish Labour were going to do a lot worse, and because they only lost two seats, it's fine.
It's fine.
Which is a really weird take. and then you've got the Lib Dems that, you know, kept four of their constituency seats. Two of them were probably genuinely because they wanted to vote Lib Dem. The other two is just tactical vote central. You know, if you look at the North East Fife has been tactical vote central since the mid-80s, so you know it's always been either the then SDP, the Lib Dems, and the SNP had it, you know, for Westminster for a little while, and I know that constituency really well because that's where Glenn grew up, and it's so that's a tactical voting thing. And then Edinburgh Western, which is, you know, a good old friend Alex Cole Hamilton, is again tactical vote central. So it's a shame only having four seats in the parliament, yet only two of them are actually wanted for their parties.
It's also in a position that if they lost those seats, they would never get them back, because once they've lost, the sort of tactical aspect kind of goes out the window a bit.
Yeah,
I would say the Lib Dems, it's probably the worst result out of all the parties from the point of view. Although they only lost one seat, that is 20% of their seats. and they now don't qualify as a party in the parliament.
I know, and the Greens better than everyone. Sorry.
What privileges do they lose then in Holyrood? Is it they can't ask questions?
I think it's some committees they lose representation on, the business of the parliament.
Yeah.
I think they lose some rights at First Minister's questions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's maybe some financial aspects. I don't know all the details, but I think it's just kind of a bit symbolic as well that, you know, the Lib Dems, one of the sort of mainstays of UK politics now, mm-hmm. is not even getting our support to be considered a party in the Scottish Parliament. And if you look at the results, they started out in 1999 with 17 MSPs.
Mm-hmm.
They retained 17 in 2003. They just dropped the one in 2007 to 16. And then 2011, they plummeted to 5 seats.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. they managed to retain them up in 2016. And now, as we just said, they've lost what it was fine.
It's almost what happened in 2010 that could have caused that. I have no idea.
I wonder. Nick Clegg.
2010 was Nick Clegg. Bed with David Cameron. Mm-hmm. Politically speaking, we don't know if there was anything beyond that, but it certainly looked not friendly.
Yeah, it sacrificed the students, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. It was tuition fees in England.
Over a decade ago now, which is a bit scary, but also shows that the Scottish electorate
makes me feel old.
I think it's going to be a long time for the Lib Dems. And even in the regionals here, most of the regions, the Greens bet the Lib Dems. So, you know, that kind of reflects the Parliament the way it stands at the moment, which is quite interesting and a really positive thing too.
Yeah, in some of the regions it's done very poorly. Like, they didn't really get close mm-hmm. in some of the regions.
Yeah.
I think Mid-Scotland and Fife, the Greens sort of just pipped them. They came close, like within 1,000 mm-hmm. votes or so, but I don't think they really get close in any other regions. I didn't look at them. I wasn't studying the Lib Dems. I was too busy obsessing about the Green vote most of the time.
I watched Christine Jardine. She was doing an interview and she was saying how Lib Dems are the party of community and mm-hmm. basically already setting up the council campaign because they always do well in the councils, the Lib Dems. Well,
I think I spoke to you about this before. I grew up in Cambuslang, and Rutherglen and Cambuslang always had quite a strong tradition. A Liberal Democrat they always got a lot of councillors round about there, which I thought was a Lanarkshire thing. But I've actually looked, and it turns out that's the only part of Lanarkshire they actually had any sort of representation. And they still, I think they're just down to the one councillor now. It's Robert Brown, who's been an MSP on and off since the Parliament started.
And that's a really local thing there in Rutherglen South with Robert Brown. And, because I used to live in Rutherglen and stood for the Greens in that seat. And he actually bet the SNP there. You know, he was the first one elected on the STV on first preference, if I remember correctly, which is, you know, obviously a very local thing. So he is the only Lib Dem that's on South Lanarkshire.
And you wonder whether when he retires, that Lib Dem vote will evaporate with him.
Yeah.
And maybe get a Green elected in there.
You might. Yeah, maybe a certain Green.
it depends if Brian moves back to Dundee or not.
We'll see. I'm moving back to the Central Belt, but I'm not sure, you know, exactly when. Who knows?
Oh, coming home.
Coming home.
Back to South Lanarkshire tomorrow.
Yeah.
I was glad to see Ross Greer get on.
Yeah.
He's been a hard working representative for the community.
He had a huge lift as well. Yeah.
Yeah, he increased it.
In 2016, it was like 17,000. Like, I think he just got in. I think it was mid 20,000 they got now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking to kick on it next election, that's one of the regions you're maybe saying, well, maybe we could sneak a second seat now if we kind of build on that. But yeah, it's a kind of safer seat than it certainly was in 2016 when it was first won.
And it's a really good place for them to start building their vote now, I think, because they're represented in most regions apart from South. So it's a really good starting point for them, I think, maybe going into the council elections and then on to any future sort of Scottish Parliament elections. It's a really, really positive time for them, I think. And Lorna Slater's been amazing to raise the profile and tap into new voters, I think. So
yeah,
just got to build on that now, I think.
Her interview on a trapeze was inspiring, to yeah, be honest. I was like, that's amazing. I really dug it. Just talking about the South there, I always thought that the border counties were always Tory, but I was looking at old maps and they used to be red, a big red wall, and I was quite surprised by that. I'm trying, let me see if I can find the tweet. I think it was 87. It was before the Holyrood, obviously, but it was it was a regional vote. Give me a minute. You talk while I go find this.
I'd be quite surprised to hear that, because I've got a friend from Galloway, and he is the biggest, one of the biggest pro-independence people I know. And you know, he resents the fact that his home sort of area is so staunchly Tory, or the sort of landowners and farmers and that.
And it's literally just like, you know, on the electoral map, it's like, you know, blue right across the border, which is really interesting. And it's almost like the SNP just starts above there and then just keeps going. It's really quite fascinating, with a couple of wee specks in there, like, you know, Jackie Bailey's seat as well. Dumbarton was was obviously a one to watch and an exciting one to watch. And then it was just like, again, tactical voting central, you know, for the on the unionist side, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't save it. I'm very silly, but that is the image of, oh, it's not going to show, of the blue wall.
Yeah, like a little blue wall right along.
Yeah.
I think it's more like the blue wellies at the bottom of sort of big yellow raincoat that Scotland puts on every 4 years. So let's go on to talk about Labour then. Actually kind of similar to the Lib Dems, that you know, they've declined in number of seats every single Holyrood election. Mm-hmm. In 1999 they had 56, which put them quite firmly in control of the parliament. So I just lost a few seats down to 50 in 2003. Then in 2007 they lost control of the parliament and they dropped down to 46, which put them one behind the SNP vote at that point. And then they dropped again in 2011 to 37, and then a big drop in 2016 down to 24. And it is kind of interesting that even though that was our worst ever result, and they've lost another two seats on top of that, you know, the media seem to be convinced that Anas Sarwar has had a great result. I find that quite baffling.
It's a really weird, you know, because, and the same can be said for Lib Dem as well, because it doesn't really get much coverage at all, but it's like, those are the two parties that lost seats. Like, why is that not, you know, Labour declines, you know, again, is not the sort of narrative that comes out of this. It's just really interesting. But I think because they were polling so badly, you know, before Richard Leonard resigned, I think it was like 14% or something like that. And so I think it was almost like, oh, well, at least they didn't do terrible, which is a really interesting place for Scottish Labour to be. Yeah. You know, even just, you know, 6 years on after they, you know, destroyed the, got destroyed in that 2015 general election.
Yeah, and I'm shocked at how they're reporting the Labour result. Like, they really are making out as if it's a wonderful result. But I think Anas Sarwar's maybe cost them some votes. I think Monica Lennon would have been a far better leader, just personally. I think she's so much more relatable.
Yeah, I've never found Anas Sarwar to be very, come across as very likeable, to be quite honest. But I must admit, he did do well in the campaign. Like, he came across as a lot more sort of personable and friendly and just kind of likeable. I'd say I was quite shocked, because I kind of disliked him before that. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's kind of rubbed off a bit in the sort of journalist's take on it, that he did have a good campaign, and even though it's not translated into a kind of positive result, you know, they're giving him the benefit of the doubt for that. It reminds me a wee bit of Annabel Goldie, who you know, was always had good campaigns and always sort of seemed quite popular, but failed to move the sort of Tory vote at all much. It really was quite stagnant. So it'll buy him time. You know, he seems to be in control of the party. It doesn't sound the elements that undermined Richard Leonard, or they seem quite supportive of Anna Sarwar.
I think with Anna Sarwar, though, like right at the start of the campaign, like in these leaders' debates and when he was being interviewed, it was very really refreshing, because he wasn't, you know, going on the attack of the SNP constantly. It was more about, this is what we need to do, this is what we need to change, education and all these really important policy areas. And I think by the time they got to the last leaders' debate, it was very much all of the same. And that sort of adult in the room approach just became really boring. That it was like, well, we know what Anna Sarwar is going to say now. Well, you know, we need to really think about this, which is important stuff that he's talking about. But I think that if he had just been a little bit more feisty in certain aspects, or you know, that type of thing. But I think it just became quite predictable by the end. And I think that's maybe where they polled quite, you know, decent, you know, near the start, and it just sort of drifted away by the end. That's just my sort of perception.
Yeah, I think that the Channel 4 debate hurt him when the moderator said to him, well, if you don't want to talk about this, that's fine, you can sit it out. When they're trying to say, we shouldn't be talking about Indiref. Well, a lot of people want to talk about Indiref on both
sides.
And again, it's a struggle to see how Labour are ever going to recover until independence is resolved, because they keep trying to sit in the middle. They're trying to be unionist, but trying not to be too unionist. So they alienate all the pro-independence supporters, which there's a lot of pro-independence Labour supporters.
I read today it was 40% of Labour voters. I mean, I did read it on Twitter, but...
Yeah.
Well, what was interesting is some of the results where the Greens stood in the constituencies, they seem to be taking more votes from Labour than they were the SNP.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Maybe tie into that.
Do you think Labour have to, not necessarily support independence, but be open to a referendum? Do you think that's something that would change their fortunes?
I think that's all they need to do. Like, nobody's asking them to, like, I don't know, like, just completely change what they think. I mean, most of the elected members, or as far as I'm aware, don't support independence, but they could just, you know, Monica Lennon's view, I think, after the last general election was quite a good starting point for them to say, well, if the Scottish election, you know, electorate tell us, we want a referendum, we need to allow that to happen. And, you know, and then, you know, and even just having an open view where, you know, any elected members or members of the Labour Party can campaign for whatever side they want.
Yeah,
I just think that would be enough for people to think, I'll give you my vote, you know, because I support your views on education and NHS and all these things. But actually, particularly that situation where they removed a candidate in Glasgow for actually having the same stance as what Monica Lennon had in the leadership, you know. Yeah, I just think that is a really bad message to send out to people like me, who, you know, as a Green person, you know, is more likely to vote Labour for their policies than the SNP for the policies. So if they're not closing that door on the constitution, then that's something that a lot of Green voters and general lefty people would consider.
It was terrible what happened to Holly. She was a young woman, wasn't she? Mm-hmm. Getting into politics. It's like, how to deter someone from trying to put themselves forward. It's terrible.
And it was clear that they were making an example. They didn't want other candidates to be saying things like that. You know, there was no need to sort of publicly sort of call her over the coals the way they did. It was shocking.
Labour's not very good for having, you know, sort of amicable disagreements or you know, throwing people under the bus to make a point. Angela Rayner, for example. You know, it's just a really ridiculous approach to things, isn't it? You know, let's make an example of one person so people don't act in a certain way or don't do certain things. It's just ridiculous.
The sort of phenomenon that I mentioned there about the Greens potentially taking more votes from Labour in places than the SNP, it actually reminds me, back when I was in the Scottish Socialist Party, it was set up by former militant Labour members, and it was always this idea that it would keep Labour left and it would take votes for Labour and force them to address sort of and stay more socialistic. But actually, we found that where SSP candidates stood, they hurt the SNP more than they hurt Labour. Mm-hmm. There was an incident in, I think, up in Dundee, totally forgot the long-standing Labour MP's name at that time, but he was very sort of friendly towards the SSP, and the local branch took the decision not to stand, mm-hmm. Because it was quite a marginal seat. And later, analysing the election results, the fact that they didn't stand actually cost me a seat, because if they had stood, they would have probably took the votes from the SNP.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just quite... It just shows you that politics doesn't always make sense and isn't logical.
No, and...
That's why you cannot tactical vote.
Exactly. Do not try and game the system. You can't game the system.
No. I agree with you. You should vote in good faith. Vote for the candidate you want. Vote for whatever party you want on the list. Like, I just... That's why Alba... I'm not going to pronounce it correctly in the Gaelic way. I'm going to pronounce it how they launched it. Alba. Alba with a hard B. That's how they failed.
I've been a bit confused with that. Is that the Gaelic pronunciation where I thought I'm more of a E sound? Alpa?
Yeah.
Right.
Alba.
I was getting really mixed up as to why people were saying it like that. And then I was
mixed up. No, that's the correct pronunciation.
Yes. It's not like BBC Alba. You know.
Or what's that footballer? Jordi Alba? Is that a footballer? Did I get a footballer? Yeah, I got a footballer's name.
That one.
My girlfriend will be so proud.
Which I think his name would translate to George Scotland.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
It's a good name. But going back to you know, like, politics is really unpredictable. I think that Joe Fitzpatrick being elected in Dundee West was such a huge thumping majority when he was actually the cabinet minister responsible for, you know, the whole drugs and then the really bad drug death rates that we had, and him being elected in Dundee. I actually felt myself really uncomfortable by seeing that. I don't know if it's just me that kind of thinks like that, but I was like, you know, Dundee is historically bad and still is bad for, you know, for issues of addiction and poverty and for unemployment and all these types of things. And the drug death issue is huge. And I just thought, I don't know. I don't know if that's just me.
No, you never know what people are taking in and when they're deciding to vote, what people are aware of, what people care about.
You
know, I'm always confused looking at some of the council election result when somebody drops out and their votes get reallocated, and a lot of times they're almost allocated randomly. You know, you see like the Greens drop out and you say, oh, that they'll probably all go to the SNP, and some of them do, but some of them you get like 3 votes will go to the Tories, and you think, who's voting Green 1 and Tory 2? They vote SSP and then UKIP, and you're like,
what?
Is that just somebody going in and just randomly putting numbers up? Because there's as much logic there.
Maybe they forgot their glasses and that's what's happened.
They're just putting numbers anywhere, you know.
That's you looking for logic again, though.
True. There's no logic in
it.
I was glad to see the Jada Franson woman get 47 votes. That was good.
Yeah. And Nicola Sturgeon's really quite good speech and calling the spade a spade, which was really refreshing and, you know, really, really positive and basically just calling out fascism and racism. And I think it's really important for you know, really prominent politicians and just saying how it is and not doing a Keir Starmer when he was on ABC saying, you know, almost, you know, where there was somebody essentially saying very similar stuff to Keir Starmer on ABC last year. You know, and just try to, you know, skirt around it and say, oh, I understand these are, you know, almost, we understand your valid concerns.
Nah.
Fascism's not welcome. Racism's not welcome. And there's a note of unity. And I think, there you go.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
So many mainstream politicians sort of panic in those situations and don't come out it well. I don't know if it's because so many of them are used to sort of controlled conditions that something sort of random, like somebody accosting in the street, they just, they're not sure how to deal with that. I think it probably helped. Nicola Sturgeon seemed to know who she was, which obviously helps. But yeah, I mean, she dealt with it great, you know, talking pulled a whip.
I thoroughly enjoyed the video. I thought it was wonderful.
It was great.
And the councillor for Govan, he was standing there, and I just liked how he kept putting the sign in front there. It was so calm. It was just like that. It was like the new was speak that the to the man, hand.
Was that the wee man that went, "That's not true. I love immigrants."
Yeah. Yes.
Good on him.
He's a councillor in Govan. He's a good guy. But, yep, that should be our intro, by the way. I've done a wee thing for it.
You're a fascist, you are a racist, and the south side of Glasgow will reject you.
Yeah.
And they did.
I was quite concerned when I seen it as well, because there didn't seem to be any security, but a lot of people were pointing out that the very large man hanging about nearby was some kind of undercover security personnel. So,
he was involved. Even if he wasn't the security, he seemed big enough and doing the eyeballs, you know.
Yes.
I don't think any. I think she's quite savvy though, our Nicola. She's
bright. She's definitely sharp, and she's on the ball. She knows exactly what she's doing, and it was just a really. And could you, you know, I think it's just such a positive thing that the leader, you know, of the Scotland, you know, the First Minister, just comes out and says that in the street to somebody who's, you know, clearly a racist and a fascist.
Exactly.
I love it.
It's so good.
I love it.
It makes you feel really proud to be Scottish, because you know Absolutely. How that's going to be reported in other countries all around the world, and it sends out the message that, see, if you want to come here to our country, you're welcome here. I like that.
And yeah, unless you're a fascist or a racist.
Yeah.
But I love, you know, really, really positive and great. And also the fact in Scotland that it was the first time that refugees were allowed to vote too.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, quite poetic as well that, you know, in such a multicultural area like the south of Glasgow. I just think that it's just a really positive outcome to a really, you know, dramatic outcome the day of the election.
I was talking to a guy in my work, he's from Cyprus, and I was asking him, saying, are you able to vote? And saying, like, because I know they've changed the rules, and I don't think you're allowed to vote at Westminster, but you can in Scottish elections. And he was quite pleased with that, but he then went on to tell me that he'd never voted in his life, either in Scotland or in Cyprus, so it didn't make a difference to him, but still. So just for the record, let's just say that Jada Franson got 43 votes.
43.
That's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate that 43 people wasted their vote on fascist.
And also, she would
how many of them forgot their glasses and thought they were voting for something else?
It's because they were wearing a mask and their glasses steamed up.
That's exactly what it is. And I thoroughly lost the deposit, which is nice.
Yes, always nice. Who else lost their deposit? Did you think Family Party lost their deposit?
They stood in a couple of constituencies actually, which
they did.
George Galloway.
Have you seen my cat? It's missing. These guys would have lost it, wouldn't they?
Reform. Definitely.
And that other one that I've lost their leaflet. Big egg.
Big egg.
Scottish Family Party. I used to know a guy that apparently is now in the Family Party, and he has got a machine, rumoured to have a machine in his living room that transmits some kind of special energy to him.
Is it 5G?
I can't remember the name of it, but if I remember,
that's
I'll message it.
Is it traditional family values?
Traditional family values being right into your brain.
Is that not what they do in Scientology? Did they not have some sort of device in Scientology that does that?
Tom Cruise.
I just want to say, if you're a Scientologist listening, that, that is a personal view of Deborah. They're very litigious, the Scientologists, so
yeah.
I'm saying nothing about them at all.
That wasn't derogatory. It was a genuine interest in about this device. I'm interested in buying one.
Right, good pick, man.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, so other fringe parties, ALPA, All for Unity. Yeah, none of them really made much of an impression, except possibly Alba picked up a few thousand votes in different regions, and who knows how those votes would have went and what differences they might have made if they went to SNP and Greens. So if they had any effect, it was negative. They certainly had a negative effect in the discourse where a lot of the transphobic dog whistles they were coming out for.
That's their legacy, as far as I'm concerned. That is some of the things I didn't think we'd be discussing in an election in Scotland in 2021 is things like let's ban conversion therapy. It's like, wait, why is that happening?
Why is then that a debate, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the whole trans rights things, it was whipped up out of this absolute fabrication of just shite, total bollocks, they were saying.
It was like Fox News, where they create a hysteria out of nothing and convince people that there's, you know, barbarians at the gates and they're wearing dresses or something, you know, I think the lead up to one of the congressional elections, they had half the electorate convinced that there was a caravan of refugees on its way to smash through the border and invade.
Mm-hmm.
The day after the election, they just thought about it. Apparently, it just disappeared.
That's right. And that was the same tactics. It was the exact same tactics. Mm-hmm. It was Trumpian. It was just, it was so frustrating. And just as a gay woman, I could see all those same things that, you know, it was like, oh, these are familiar. I've heard this before.
You know, people were saying it was like sort of repackaged homophobia, which, you know, to an extent it was, but they didn't even bother repackaging it. They just sort of took it out, you know, wiped the dust off it, and then just changed one word, you know, and just plonked it out. And it literally just got the Tippex out, and it's just so damaging. It's just, yeah, I've got so much I would like to say about it, but it's just so bad and just unnecessary and targeting, you know, a really small minority of people. And it's just unacceptable. It really is. It really angers me. And that's one of the main reasons that I don't really engage in Twitter and stuff anymore, because I just don't want to see it, you know. And it's just a shame that Alba, you know, not so much officially in their campaign, was, you know, it was never really mentioned by, you know, in the publications or anything like that. It was very much just a Twitter-based, you know, rabble and discussion and bullying and hatred. And it just has no place in political discourse.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, because Alex Salmond came out in defence of some of the stuff that their supporters were saying. So I think it was a bit mainstream, and their manifesto was littered with,
yes,
you know, we will protect sex-based rights. What is that? What is a sex-based right? Go to tell me.
No idea. Absolutely no idea. But to be fair, I didn't watch any of Alex Salmond's, you know, we just rants phase living room where podium, just, you know, chatting and you know, trying to make himself relevant. But yeah, it's just minging.
Yeah, if there's anything positive to come out of Alba, it's the fact that they've drawn the poison out of a lot of the SNP. There was a lot of nasty people who were starting to get into kind of influential positions in the SNP. And the creation of Alba's kind of drawn them out and sort of quarantined them. And hopefully, you know, this epic failure in the election will just make them go away. I don't know whether Alba... They're all saying that they're going to continue and they're here for the long haul, but that remains to be seen. Certainly next year, I look forward to seeing all the councillors that defected getting tossed out.
And Alba saying that if they do continue, what are they going to do? Like, stand to be councillors to try and bring about Indy from, you know, the South Lanarkshire Council base in Hamilton? I mean, what like is that the plan?
Well, their plan was whatever 2 MSPs they were going to get, or 10, depending who you listen to, they were going to... Oh, did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
They were so optimistic. Well, they were going to be the kingmakers of the Scottish Parliament.
Of course they were.
Which, of course.
Isn't it be a thing?
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of still feel sorry for all the supporters that bought into it without really considering, well, there's already a viable alternative independent vote just right there.
Yeah, but like, the line that I kept hearing from all the supporters were, well, the Greens don't really support independence. It's like,
yeah,
what are you possibly basing that on? You know, it's, I keep hearing that, oh, there's a lot of unionists in the Greens, but I've never met them. I've never met a single unionist, and I've never met a unionist for five years. I've heard stories about older members at some stage that weren't so sure in 2014. That was a long time ago now in politics.
Yeah.
7 years is a long time.
Because Lorna Slayer actually, I think, challenged that on, I was watching one of the coverages, and she, you know, they were saying, oh, it's like 43% of your, you know, Green voters don't support independence. And what she said was, yeah, that was the Lord Ashcroft poll that looked at, they had used the data from constituency voters in the Scottish Greens. I think it was at a Westminster election. So basically out of two or three seats. So, you know, it was such a tiny sample that was just completely skewed. But she did point to the actual regional regional votes. And actually that's not the case. So, because I don't know any of these unionist Greens either.
And if you're a unionist and you're into environmentalism and that's why you want to vote for the Greens and you hate independence, you'd think they would have changed their mind about voting Green when we've voted through independence bills in the past. Because certainly, like, I know lots of Labour and Tories that were up in arms about that. Somehow the Greens were betraying their voters by, like, I'll just check my notes here, supporting a policy that they put in their manifesto. And if there really was the phantom unionist Green voter, well, they wouldn't be for long if they really cared that much about unionism.
Yeah, and even if they were like, I love the Greens, but I don't support independence, then they would just vote no in the independence referendum.
Yeah.
You know, like, anyway.
But also, of course, if the Greens don't really support independence, according to Alba, Nicola Sturgeon is actually a secret unionist spy.
Is she some sort of MI5?
SNP don't support independence, according to Alba. So,
fair play, if an MI5 are the reason for Nicola Sturgeon, I think we owe them a debt for what she's done for independence. I did hear a story one time from a friend that was in the Communist Party that said that they had a guy joined the party and he was amazing. They said he was one of the best organisers they'd seen. He set up this massive youth network in the Midlands and then he vanished and they later found out that he was some kind of security service agent. And they all just talked about how great he was and wished he'd come back. he was all right, he was working for MI5, but what an organiser that was. So if Nicola Sturgeon's really worked for MI5, I would expect that they'll pull her quite soon because they can't be intending for her to actually deliver independence, surely.
Would it not be really funny though if it was true, right? And then that picture got taken today and she was waving going into Butte House and then she just went in the door and then just was never seen again.
I'd be sad about that.
It would be really sad. It'd be really sad, but it's like that would just be how that would end.
Think of the conspiracy theories.
I know, that she just gets pulled and that's it.
That was a big thing this election as well, conspiracy theories. I have never seen so many wild conspiracies in any election of you guys. Like, some of them were absurd. Like, there was conspiracy theories starting before the election had finished about the count and stuff.
He's watching the ballots.
Yeah. I saw somebody tweet sarcastically, and a lot of people didn't seem to get the sarcasm, where somebody said, what's happening with the ballot? And they responded saying, it's ridiculous, they're just leaving them in Sucky Hall Street. They didn't hear anything. And loads of people seem to take it seriously, which I quite wonder about the mindset if you hear that and think, are they really just leaving the ballot boxes sitting in Sucky Hall Street? Surely logic would dictate you would think, nah, can't be true. That doesn't make any sense.
The one I liked was, why are they not counting overnight like normal with all the counters? And it's like, oh, I don't know, maybe this global pandemic.
Has there been anything recently in the last year or so that might have changed something?
What could have changed this election? I just don't understand.
That's an achievement in itself, actually, getting a record registration of voters, turnout of voters, and then awesome result for the SNP and Greens. It's a good result in the middle of a pandemic.
Definitely. And I think as well, they were saying the sort of analysis was that was like, yeah, well, people might not have a lot of things going on at the moment. And I was like, aye, but I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that's actually a thing? Like, people have just been stuck at home, so they're like, oh, I'm going to follow politics and then vote. Or do you think it's maybe a genuine turnout for the fact that this was such a big vote in terms of the constitution?
That's a very good question.
I have no explanation of why the turnout jumped so much.
I think it was reactionary, personally. I think everybody's fed up, sick to the back teeth, seen what's going on down in Bonnie Westminster, what's happening down there.
So do you think it's a sort of Brexit, Boris sort of reaction?
It's an accumulation of everything, the corruption, all the dodgy deals, all the mismanagement, what was going on with, you know, coronavirus when it first came. And like, I think that it's definitely been a reactionary thing, but I was worried that the turnout wouldn't be good because some folk would still be a bit worried, about going out to vote. But it's astonishing what we actually achieved. I think it's I think it's a great achievement.
I know, and I was shocked.
62%.
And it's a big jump, and for the Scottish elections, that's the highest ever, right? It's the highest ever, which is amazing considering it was so high. But it's so difficult because you don't know the reasons, you know, the actual reasons for everybody going out and voting. But like you say, it could be because what's going on down in London, where do you even start? And then obviously the pandemic, and then it could be the fact that people have been following politics a bit more because they have been at home, you know? I know that from when, you know, part of my research and stuff from my PhD, and speaking to people that work in hospitality that have been off, you know, on furlough, have been a lot more engaged in politics because they've actually got the time. So there is perhaps some truth in that, the fact that people are just been following politics a bit more, getting more angry about it and wanting to sort of, you know, vote to do that.
Maybe also their lives have been impacted more by
directly.
Policy. So that they've just got more engaged because they're like, this is terrible. How have I got to wait 5 weeks for my universal credit? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it could be something as personal as that, or it could be the bigger picture. But I think one thing that was clear from every single manifesto, and you guys are already all over it, was the climate change, environmental issues. And I was so pleased to see that so high on the agenda of everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that was telling. And the youth vote as well. Remember, there was like, oh, the 16, 17-year-olds got to vote.
That's true. Sometimes I wonder, we haven't voted at 18, but by the time people get to 18, some of that youthful enthusiasm for politics is sort of already fading. So maybe at 16, it's a better way of hooking people and getting people engaged in politics, you know, stay engaged. Something that the pandemic has made me think about as well is we get so used to picking politicians based on their politics, and mostly their politics. But I think the pandemic has showed us how important competence is. You know, and Boris was just not the man for this job. As much as nobody in Scotland really is a fan of Thatcher, you know, at least she had a level of competence that I think she would have probably dealt with a pandemic better than Boris is. Because Boris, I can't even deal with his hair, never mind.
That's controversial. It sounded almost like you were saying Margaret Thatcher wasn't that bad.
No, she's not that bad now.
She's not bad now. But no, like the competence level, and I think it's been quite interesting because, you know, the polling of how they think they're doing well in the pandemic is so high for Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland and really, really low for Boris Johnson. And it really comes down to, I think, how they communicate, how they appear to be competent, how they appear to be more cautious, they appear to be putting in a lot more stricter interventions. And I think that it's all about, you know, appearance and how they come across, and, you know, that, you know, is self-evident with Boris Johnson.
Do you think seeing Nicola Sturgeon on the TV every day
mm-hmm.
made a difference to, mm-hmm. yeah, I think so. I think it's engaged a lot more people.
Yeah, and yeah. I think as well, the feeling that Nicola Sturgeon cared a bit more about the pandemic and the effect it's having on people, whereas it just seemed to be a hassle for Boris, something that he had to deal with because he was a Prime Minister, yeah. that he would rather not bother.
And constantly wheeling out all these different cabinet ministers every day, just, you know, it's almost like, oh, well, it's Priti Patel's turn, sorry, you've got to go and do it. And then, you know, and you're just getting the rotating between all these different cabinet ministers. And I don't think that landed as well as what it did in Scotland, because Nicola Sturgeon was there, you know, 6 days a week, and then it was like Jean Freeman used to do Sunday, or, you know, and I think that worked really, really well, because there was a consistency every day, and Nicola Sturgeon was answering the questions that were put to her by the media clearly, honestly, whereas, you know, all these media questions, if there were difficult questions for Boris Johnson, it was almost just affronted that he was being asked these difficult questions, and it's almost like, oh, it's really tough just now, we don't know what's going on. Well, nobody really does, but you should, you know. So it's, you know, I think that was definitely a contributing factor for Nicola Sturgeon's polling for how they think she's dealt with the pandemic.
How do you think this election was for the Scottish Tories?
it's hard to say, really. It's just basically more of the same from 2016, isn't it?
I just find Douglas Ross so monotonous and mm-hmm. predictable. You know what he's going to say. He doesn't want it.
You just can't, Colin.
You can't. You just can't.
I mean, I think it was an excellent result for them, which both of you look as if you didn't want to say.
No, but I don't want to say.
I was just disappointed.
2016 was a great was the best ever result, I think. And the fact that they've managed to retain that kind of really surprised me. I thought they were going to lose a lot of seats, partly because Douglas Ross was just like a clown for a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to be there much longer. The Tories are very unforgiving in leaders that they don't feel is cutting
the mustard. Look at Jackson Carlow. I mean, that was like a coup that just happened within almost like days, wasn't it? It was like, things are not going well. He's gone. Oh, there's somebody standing and no one's challenging them. You know, and then all of a sudden he was the new leader. And yeah, I don't think he'll last much longer, to be honest.
It was like a change in power in a sort of mafia family.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jackson Kerlaw get invited over for a coffee and ended up getting executed. And he was gone. And the new guy was in place as if he'd always been in place.
Yeah, it was really quite strange. And it was because Jackson Carlow was like the shortest leader, wasn't he? I don't know even how long it was, but it just seemed to happen really quickly. There was no one challenging him, and he was just reinstated as the new leader. And they thought, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's give it to the guy who is going to have a dual mandate and be a linesman in football, because that's going to go down really, really well.
If they had won, he'd also be First Minister, so he'd have like four jobs.
Four jobs.
Quadruple threat.
You've got to wonder the mindset of somebody that wants to be a referee and the leader of the Tories. That's somebody with a lot of self-loathing, I think. That's somebody that wants to be hated.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, but I don't think he's going to last much longer. I don't think he had a very good campaign at all. But like you said, it was a good result for them because they managed to maintain that lift in 2016. And, you know, say what you want about Ruth Davidson, Baroness Davidson, as she'll be called, that she was one of these people who was a clear communicator and not as monotonous as, mm-hmm. and then managed to sort of distance herself from that, oh, I'm a horrible Tory, and disengaged completely. Even though there were so many different times where it aligned too close to home, like where there was the confidence and supply deal with the DUP, you know, she managed to get you know, she hid for days and days and then just sort of came out as if it never happened. Yeah. And then she was being interviewed in Edinburgh about it, and they asked her about it, and she just walked away from the reporter. And I was like, is this what we do? We just pretend the question wasn't asked. But, you know, she managed to distance herself from the Tories at Westminster, and the fact that the Tories managed to keep it.
She had a bit of gumption about her, didn't she, Ruth Davidson? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I found her very unlikable, but at the same time, she did have personality.
That's personality is the word, because Douglas Ross is like a damp paper towel that's mm-hmm. been sitting in the sink for a long time.
Yeah.
And when you go to pick it up.
No offense to any damp paper towels out there.
Definitely.
Like, he's just, there's nothing about the guy. And that was their single policy for this election. Stop another referendum. That was it. There was nothing else. They would talk about, oh, we need to give more money to healthcare, mental health. Oh, no, that was Willie Rennie, wasn't it?
Willie Rennie just went mental health.
Yeah. No, I can't even find another policy on this. It's just Labour would rather work with SNP, stop this, we can stop the referendum. Yeah. That's all that's on their leaflet.
You've got to love the Tories who, all through the campaign, said, don't vote for the SNP. If you vote for the SNP, it's going to be a second referendum. And then as soon as the count's finished, they're like, well, just because people voted for the SNP, it doesn't mean they want a second referendum.
And then Douglas Ross came out today on ITV and said, yeah, it's out with the competence of the Scottish Parliament. And I was like, we've just been speaking about this on loop for the last, you know, the whole campaign. And now you're just like, yeah, but it's not within the competence, so that's not going to happen.
But did you see what Gov said on Mar?
Oh, let's go. He is, yeah, and apparently they're not going to take them to the Supreme Court, the SNP, Scottish Government, to Supreme Court to challenge it, which... I think they won't do it because it's a really bad PR for them, but I don't know how it's going to pan out now. But I just want Sturgeon to come out and, you know, obviously we'll get the pandemic out of the way, and then she can just go like, right, this is it, this is what's happening. And it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
I saw a good tweet today that said, Nicola Sturgeon says, as soon as we're out of the pandemic and lockdown, we're moving on with things, we'll have a referendum, and Boris Johnson is desperate to get out of a lockdown and move on with things, so it's kind of stuck in a bit of a catch-22.
Yes.
So obviously the SNP get one more seat than they got in 2016, which took them to within one seat of a overall majority. Do you think we'll get in there now? What's the plan? What's the strategy for that?
Well, I was in the ungagged pools for the longest time since 2014, as the next referendum would be 2021. Obviously, that's not happening. But my next guesstimate is 2023. I think we'll put it in at maybe the end of this year, start of next year, and then I'll go. Like, I don't see how the UK government can deny it. I mean, Britain's, or the UK, whatever you want to call it, is already a laughingstock in the world. If Boris Johnson's then like, oh no, Scotland can't have another independence referendum, even though they've got this independence party majority. Oh, like, it's going to, he's going to have to relent. But the UK government is a government of, like, bureaucracy. That's how they run. So you've got to exhaust all that bureaucracy to get what you want, basically. That's my opinion, anyway. 2023.
There's a sort of counterpoint, though. Boris Johnson and his merry band of Brexiteers don't seem to be bothered about being laughingstock.
This is true.
I'm really not sure that they seem kind of immune to the pressure that, you know, is likely to come. The pressure is likely to come from the international community to a certain extent. But, you know, I don't think that means a jot to Boris and his pals.
And that's a fair point.
And I think they're telling the jokes that in their place will probably play very well with the sort of core Tory vote in England. So I don't really see where the pressure is coming to make Boris change his mind. And that's what I'm worried about. And I've not heard anything for the SNP or, you know, what do we do if Boris does just dig his heels in and says no. No discussion of it,
they basically said like no to, you know, some kind of wildcat referendum or a legal referendum or whatever you want to call it. And basically, it seems that the only route that they want to go down, or the initial route that they'll go down, is the legal challenge. And I think that's where it's going to go. I don't know how far down that road it's going to get, because if the Scottish Government says, right, you know, if Boris Johnson says no and the Scottish Government says, well, we've got a mandate to do it, we're going to start challenging this in court, then the UK government has to make a decision if they are going to challenge it to a certain extent in the courts. But every time, the further and further that goes down the line, and it just makes the UK government look really, really unreasonable.
Yeah.
I think that it will actually be political pressure in that process that will bring it around, and there will be a legal referendum. I think that, because you said 2023, when is the next general election? Is it 2024?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it will be that year.
Do you?
Yeah. They'll cave during the sort of lead up to the...
Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that, you know, they're going to have to secure that before then. But I think for the SNP, it would work really well, actually, if they said, right, you know, say next year they start the process, Section 30 order. Boris says no, back and forth, and then we go down the legal route. They'll give in. And if the SNP were thinking about this and being quite clear about this, they could say, right, we could have it in September 2024. General election will be in May. SNP gets an absolute stonker in Scotland again, which reinforces, right, this is it, it's on. And I think that would be quite a good tactic for the SNP going into the start of a referendum campaign with, you know, 50 MPs or even more, or, you know, even doing another 2015 beforehand. And I think that that would put the SNP on a really good stance going into a sort of yes, you know, a pro-independence campaign.
You want to hear my plan?
Go on.
Right. Don't tell MD. It's a secret plan. I think the SNP should use the fact that so many MPs down at Westminster Mount just voting as a block, you know, doesn't really get us that far. But if they just done a kind of all-out direct action, disrupting everything they possibly can, you know, I don't know what procedural things, but I am talking, let's get like school kid level, start sticking chewing gum in the locks in the morning, switch off the Wi-Fi routers, pull the fire alarms, just anything, just piss off every single member of parliament down there. So they get to the point where they just go, just bloody give them the referendums. Let them
It's a really good point, because it'll disrupt democracy completely in England, because they have, you know, had like any devolution, you know, their mayoral systems, and that doesn't really deal with much. It would completely stop democracy in England if they kept doing that. And I think what they can do is they can keep trying to disrupt in ways like they've done before, by saying, right, we want this house to sit in private, so it needs to be suspended, they need to go out, come back in, do all these different things. They can start doing direct action like that. And it could be really problematic for procedural stuff to get through Parliament.
See, I like it when they break tradition and don't do things they're meant to, or like touch things they're not meant to, like the big gold stick. I'm into that. I like David's plan. Steal the big gold stick. Well, just run a boot with it.
The Scottish electorate would get behind them.
They would.
The most excited I've seen people about the SNP at Westminster was, remember when the speaker threw Ian Blackford out and they all walked out.
Yeah.
I know loads of people that seem to think, this is it, this is independence. Like, some people seem to
this
think,
is what it looks like.
That's it, we've just decided we're away. See you later.
No, I think, and it's true, and I think people really relate to that, because, you know, Scotland and England and the rest of the UK, you know, are quite similar in a lot of ways, the way they view politics and certain things, right? One thing that Scotland is completely different about is about traditions, the British state, all these types, royal family, all these types of things, yeah? So when the SNP start disrupting Westminster or the House of Lords or whatever, however they were able to do that, I think that would have quite a widespread appeal and actually been like, okay, so, you know, disobedience is on. Let's start, you know. It would be great to start seeing that, but do I think it will happen straight away? I don't know. Not while they're sat at home on Zoom, like, you know.
It's true.
I just don't know if the SNP will get it in them. It's not really, I'm not meaning it as a criticism, but it's...
Yeah, you do.
They just, but they're just kind of, they like to play within the lines, you know, they don't like breaking the rules. And I just, as much as I'm saying I think that's what they should do, I honestly kind of see them going with it. I can see Mary Black getting involved, actually.
But
Ian Blackford and a lot of the other ones, I think they care about being good parliamentarians. You know, I think they've bought into some of the sort of traditions of Westminster, and I'm just not sure I've got faith in a lot of them that they would be able to get talked into doing that kind of thing.
But if any of the SNP parliamentarians are listening to this, then we back you to start doing sort of disobedience
stink
things.
Bombs, and stink bombs.
The BAM.
Prime Minister's questions.
Grab the stick.
We'll call it the grand BAM up. That's what it'll be known as. You should
like that.
The BAM up strategy.
BAM up strategy. And actually Steal the stick.
Steal the stick, because if the stick isn't in place, is that not, because that's to represent the crown, that if that's not in place, then the parliament can't. So I don't know how far you would get with a big stick, though. I don't think you would actually get out the
The last time it got lifted off the desk in front of the speaker's box and turned round, that was as far as it got.
Is that Michael Hayes thing that's done that?
No, it was recently. Let me Google. Yeah, it was quite recently. Quite a recent thing.
That was during the sort of the proroguing of Parliament, wasn't it, when that happened?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm talking about weight.
What? It's not called the stick.
There is a name for it.
It's not called the stick.
The mace.
Government mace.
Back in the 80s, Michael Heseltine, I don't even know what the debate was, but he lost the plot and just lifted it up and started waving it like a storm.
It was a Labour MP that removed it.
Oh, was it?
Is that right? Lloyd Russell Moyle grabbed the ceremonial mace in protest at the government's handling of Brexit.
Yeah.
And it was a spur of the moment act. And I say more of that.
He doesn't sound like a revolutionary, though, does he?
No, he should have ran a bit. It's 5 foot. It's 5 foot. That's like picking up my ma.
You
wouldn't get very far. And it's silver gilt. It must be heavy.
Although, wait a minute.
I'm 5'3". That's just slightly smaller than me. Right. So there you go.
So we need to figure out who the strongest SNP MP is, and then get Chris Law. Act as blockers.
So Chris Law is like Chris 12 Law, foot. He's 12 foot high.
I'm surprised. I'm
Are you only 5'3", Brian?
Yes, I'm only 5'3".
2 inches taller than Kylie Minogue.
How amazing is that?
You could be a pop star.
You're absolutely delighted with that, Brian.
Absolutely. I'm delighted with that.
Who is the tallest MP we have? Is it Rees-Mogg? It's got to be, in it. I don't know why. I'm always interested in people's heights.
Is Nicholas Soames still an MP? He looked pretty tall. Certainly pretty big.
Was he?
No, I think he stood down. Is that Churchill's grandson or something?
Yeah.
He stood down at the general election.
Was he a Tory? Yeah.
He was a Tory. And he blocked me on Twitter, yet I'd never ever spoken to him. Weird, yeah.
Did you ever hear the quote about him from his ex-wife?
No.
Somebody was asked what it was like to sleep with him, and she said, have you ever had a wardrobe following you with a key in the door?
What?
She said, having sex with them is like having a wardrobe fall on top of you with a key in the door.
Oh. It's a heterosexual thing, right? I get
it. Got there in the end.
I was so confused.
I don't know if I've got much else to talk about. I'm really glad we ended up dying of you blankly staring at me when I told my joke.
please tell me this is a visual podcast, because that's the best bit.
I think we're going to do a video recording and an audio rip also, but this has been very experimental and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. We have been gibbering for a good couple of hours, by the way.
Yeah.
Hour and a bit.
Wow.
We need to ask the audience and listeners, did you like this? Is this something you want to see more of, or something you want to see less of, or something you want to see with different people?
If you want to see it with different people, keep that to yourself.
No, I'm talking about we can invite other people to join us. So if the listeners or viewers or however you are letting any this enter,
tweet us @_ungag. You can find us on Facebook as well. And if you want to follow me at DaveOMac82, and Deborah, if you're looking want to get any followers out of this,
I don't mind. You can follow me if you want. I'm Heath P. Picked.
Right, are you still boycotting social media?
I am on Twitter, but I'm private. But you can try and follow me, and I'll decide if I'm going to let you follow me or not. @WeSociologist.
Okay, everybody, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. So hopefully this will be the first of many. And thanks if there's anybody actually listening to this. So quite thank you for listening. And
yes,
we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I'm a Scotsman and I don't like my country being turned into another country by you.
You're a fascist, you are a racist, and the south side of Glasgow will reject you.
Jada Franson, independent, 46. Nicola Ferguson Sturgeon, Scottish National Party SNP, 19,735.
And yesterday, not for the first time, the constituency was targeted by far-right thugs. The far-right thug who led that confrontation got 46 votes, and I am proud that once again Glasgow South Side has shown the racists and the fascists that they are not welcome in Glasgow South Side, they are not welcome in Glasgow, and they are not welcome anywhere in Scotland. And let that be a note of unity.